Welcome to KBOO, Teferet Ani.
Thank you for having me.
Well, earlier this year, the Movement Advancement Project reported that 280 bills had been introduced around the country that would censor lessons on LGBTQ plus and racial issues, or would create a hostile school climate for vulnerable students. As a curriculum specialist, a pedagogical scholar, and consultant for K through 12 teachers, you bring extensive experience to the question of how to fight these reactionary assaults on critical thinking and social justice. So let's start by talking about the LGBTQ plus course that you designed and taught, I believe, starting last fall, a course that brings queer studies into the high school history curriculum. Can you tell us about that course and your approach to integrating LGBTQ plus history into high school coursework?
Absolutely. And so first and foremost, I want to acknowledge and thank people who collaborated with me on those projects. First and foremost, the students themselves who advocated for the creation of the LGBTQ plus studies course. It really was student advocacy that led the district that I work for to decide, yes, let's go ahead and do this. And so I decided to continue working with those same student leaders to get their feedback about what they wanted the course to look like and to actually develop the materials. What projects would students be doing? What would be the units of study? And some of the things that were really important to us in creating that elective were having an intersectional approach. Sometimes BIPOC queer people, especially trans people, can be marginalized in the telling of LGBTQ history. And we wanted to make sure that the course wasn't coming from a cisgender white male lens, and that it was including diverse racial and also gender and sexualities. And we also wanted to make sure that it wasn't just focused on American history or the United States today, that it included more of a global look at what was happening. And then alongside the elective, as you already mentioned, we thought it was important that we had LGBTQ history in the core courses that are graduation requirements, so that we wouldn't create a situation where LGBTQ history is seen as separate and has to be designated to a special course that's only voluntary, but instead all students would see that LGBTQ history is part of American history and would learn some of it in their courses required for graduation.
Another part of your project focuses on, you mentioned these categories that are available more or less restricted in different historical contexts. And now we have what some would say is a bewilderingly long set of categories that really, from one perspective, expresses the rich, complex, and diverse range of sexual and gender identities that have been claimed in various ways. And I know many people are frustrated with how to remember LGBTQIA plus, and we struggle with whether we're leaving something out. You vary in how much you use all of those letters and numbers, but recognize them as you go. Could you say something about how you understand that list of letters and symbols and numbers that is meant to capture that very diversity?
So language is constantly evolving, and that's something that I definitely embrace. As a teacher, I want my students to tell me who they are when they're comfortable. And so whatever labels they develop or use and share with me, I honor. You know, language is constantly developing and becoming more nuanced, and it seems like there's ever more categories because people are looking for words to describe who they are so that they can share who they are with other people and know who they are themselves. And then, of course, as a historian, you know, when we're looking at evidence and how people felt and what actions they took and how they presented themselves, I think if we just think about it in terms of queer being anything that is not strictly cisgender or strictly heterosexual, Then we're putting a lot of behaviors that go outside the cis heteronormative society without being specific about the specific label, right? And not using labels that maybe only existed today or after the person's life. So in the study of history, I think it's really useful to say, is there evidence of queerness, right? Non-cisgender, non-heteronormative behavior. But of course, when it comes to today and our students and people who say, this is my identity, we want to honor that by using the labels that they use themselves.
Yeah, and I'd like you to also talk about how that project of recognizing this rich diversity and the claims made that people have the right to make about the specificity of their sexual and gender identity to some of the controversies of our times. And you've taken up some interesting examples in what I've read. One is, of course, now the struggle over women's sports teams and whether trans women should be able to compete on women's professional sports teams. Another is gender and bathrooms, the right to use a bathroom of a identified gender that you are comfortable with. How do you take up these examples to engage students in what seems to be also critical thinking in general, how to unpack an issue, how to understand what the investments are in it, how to find another angle or way of looking at it other than through this very rigid lens of traditional sex differences or gender differences? So could you talk about maybe one or two of those examples and how you approach them in the classroom?
Sure. So I think that everything stems from understanding that gender is a social construct, right? And biological sex is not as binary as we've been taught to believe. And then I always like to use a historical context and examples to explain things that we're seeing today. There has always been tensions in the LGBTQ rights movement, right? Especially between cisgender people and transgender people. We can go back to the ways that BIPOC trans women were marginalized in the early movement and even, you know, during Stonewall. In 1973, Sylvia Rivera gave this very stirring speech at the Christopher Street Liberation Day parade. She wasn't actually allowed to speak. She jumped on the stage and sort of grabbed the mic. So was, you know, speaking critically of the lesbian feminist who tried to exclude her as a trans woman. And I think with students, we want to have built historical empathy. So we don't want to see anyone like Jean O'Leary as bad or Sylvia Rivera as bad or one of them as right. I think we want to look and see where are each of them coming from? Because we have, you know, women's liberation, feminist movements happening at the same time as the gay rights movement. And of course, these things intersect, right?
But there are tensions at the collisions at the intersection.
Absolutely. So while, you know, Jean O'Leary was a lesbian, identified as a woman and a feminist and felt, you know, a huge misogyny and therefore was against what she referred to as the ridicule of women caricaturing of them by cross-dressing, we have Sylvia Rivera who sees herself as a woman, not a man, and is, you know, presenting as fits her gender identity. And so having students sort of understand where both sides are coming from and just thinking through what are the tensions and what can be some of the ways that we affirm the dignity and humanity of all people, right? That it's not necessarily either or, but how can we bring these together, right? I think there's definitely complex issues when it comes to, you know, women feeling safe and transgender people being recognized and able to, you know, exist fully in their humanity. And so thinking through what are some potential solutions to things like the sports or restroom debates. So for example, you know, single occupancy, all gender restrooms are something that a lot of schools are moving to because they provide individual safety and privacy while also, you know, disrupting the gender binary. When it comes to sports, having our students think through, like, why are sports segregated by gender? If something is determined to be, you know, a factor that influences success, such as weight, for example, why don't we just have classes based on weight instead of, you know, gender or sex, which is what we do in things like wrestling. So why, when it comes to sort of swimming, maybe it should be based on height or arm span. Why gender when we know that that is a construct? So thinking through, you know, some of the alternate ways to go about this that disrupt a cis heteronormative society, you know, without maybe delegitimizing viewpoints that have some validity on multiple sides.
And you're teaching students that there are many dimensions of difference, and certain differences become very charged, and there's investment in them around race and gender, and become fetishized and the grounds for exclusion and oppression. But by reorienting the discussion to other dimensions of difference that may materially contribute more directly to the problem at hand, it is kind of a way of reorienting these problems, yeah, as opposed to just shutting them down.
Yeah. And one thing that Chris Mosier, a trans athlete, often brings up is there's not the same uproar about trans men competing in male sports as there is about trans women competing in female sports. Why is that, right? And so if you're bringing sort of like some of those selfish motives of like competition and being able to win, then that would explain some of that difference, right? But Chris also reminds us that there's so many factors that make up, you know, an athlete's success. Biological determinism isn't the only thing. So I think you have to also get our students to really question, why are they having the emotional reaction they're having, and have them sort of like reflect on that by showing them things that are the same that they also don't have the same reaction to.
Yeah. And you're kind of opening up a world to explore more in a more complex, nuanced way, as opposed to the accusation that progressive educators are censoring students or trying to impose a way of thinking on them. You really are inviting students to think in more complex ways, even around a bathroom, when you talk about, well, what do you need in a bathroom and what needs to be private? What are the variations and practices around the world around the toilet? And this is also an area that perhaps becomes private and difficult to talk about. What happens in bathrooms, what is involved with sexual differences, gender differences. Do you find that this area of sexual and gender identities and bringing those issues to the classroom is charged in a different way from addressing racism and race in the classroom?
Yeah. So just like sometimes whiteness is seen as the norm and being raceless, a lot of times being cisgender or heterosexual is seen as the norm, right? But everybody has sexual orientation. Everybody has gender identity. And we're so used to talking about the gender identity and sexual orientation of people who are cis and heterosexual, that doesn't bother anybody, right? But as soon as you're talking about trans or non-heterosexual identities, then people get bothered. And I think part of that has to do with just the way we've all been socialized in a cis heteronormative society, but also the ways that religion plays a role in people's lives. And they feel like if you're teaching about LGBTQ people, you are proselytizing that, you know, things that are anti their religion. And certainly people have the misguided notion that if you're talking about LGBTQ individuals, you are going to be talking about their sex lives with intimate details. I mean, just like we can talk about Henry VIII's relationships without getting graphic, we can do the same for Bayard Rustin's relationships.
Is there a way listeners can find out more about your course and your broader curricular projects?
Well, I do work with the Zen Education Project. I think a lot of their views about people's history and teaching accurate history and not sort of simplifying it or taking away some of the ugly truths about history apply to LGBTQ history as well, right? We shouldn't whitewash or straight wash our curriculum. And so what I would say is, there's some great general resources that I rely on about LGBTQ history. The Queer America podcast put out by Learning for Justice. It's based on a wonderful book edited by Lila Rupp called Understanding and Teaching LGBTQ History. There's the Hidden Voices curriculum that's available for free from the New York City Department of Education. Look up great resources like History Unerased. Those are just a few that I recommend. And of course, people can follow me on social media to get in touch and see more of what I'm doing and posting.
Well, thank you so much for both your own work and these wonderful resources you're suggesting. And thank you so much for being with us today, Deferit Ani.
Thank you, Jan. It was a pleasure to speak with you, and happy Pride to all listeners. And remember that remembering and learning our history is resisting. So bring that to a classroom near you.